Hi, and welcome to Out on the Edge, where co-hosts Judy McCord, Robin Hamilton, and Betty Priu, three queer, weird sisters Shakespeare could not have foreseen, present an all-ages tour of what it's like to be gay and gray in North Carolina for these interesting times. For today's episode, September 15th, 2025, we're delighted to have Heather Burkhart, Associate Director for Outreach and Advocacy with AARP in the Triangle Region, chatting with Judy McCord. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you.
First, though, we'd like to give a shout-out to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro at 103.5 FM for hosting our show. We're brought to you by the Orange County, North Carolina Department on Aging, to whom we are deeply grateful for their guidance and support. You can listen to the show live Monday afternoons 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, or stream us when convenient on WCOMFM.org. Archive shows can be found in the Orange County Department on Aging website at www.orangecountync.gov/aging, as well as a host of links to helpful resources and services for seniors in Orange County, North Carolina. We honor that the town of Carrboro and surrounding land was originally part of the Saponi people's territory, which also included the Eno, Tutelo, and Sikori Nation. Lastly, questions and suggested topics for future shows can be emailed to outontheedgeradio@gmail.com. Thank you. Judy, you are up.
Thank you. Heather, welcome to Out on the Edge. I want to thank you right up front for all the support you have given our LGBTQ plus senior resource team at Seymour Center. We really appreciate being heard and honored by AARP. That means a lot.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you first to tell us a bit about your story. What has inspired your journey?
Oh, thanks, Judy, and thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. This is just such a cool show. I just think I'm honored to be part of it. And, you know, I think I've been with AARP for 2 years now, so I haven't had my whole life journey with AARP like some of my colleagues, but I have been really focused on older adults ever since graduate school. So I got a certificate in gerontology, a master's in social work, and I pretty much work only with older adults, but really have a deep love and commitment working with the LGBTQ community. And I've had an opportunity to kind of weave that work through all different roles that I've had, which I have really enjoyed. Sometimes you don't have jobs where you can kind of pick and choose and get to do those focus areas that you want to, but I've been able to kind of connive a way to be able to do it. And I say connive, which is probably not the right word because it's always been very supportive. But it's, you know, you always have to do something that feeds your soul.
Absolutely.
And this work really feeds my soul. And AARP is just fantastic organization, and they work hard every day to really empower people to live the way they choose to as they age. And that's really, no matter who you are, there's a deep respect for diversity and community, dignity and worth. And so that value of the community is really important to AARP.
And we are grateful for that. There are so many places now who are having to step back from their advocacy for our community, that I'm hopeful you won't ever have to step back.
No, we won't ever. We're unwavering and really value that diversity that the community brings and the diversity within the community. It just makes the American quilt even more interesting and more valued.
Yeah. The American quilt.
It really is. And, you know, I don't think people realize that we, of our membership of AARP, we have over 1 million members who self-identify with being the LGBT community.
Wow.
And so we want to...
We are everywhere.
You are. And you have so much
awesome
to bring, and there's a richness, and AARP wants to really bring in tools and resources and opportunities so that all of our members can get what they need. So I don't want to spend too much doing a commercial, but...
Oh, that's what this whole interview is about, my
dear. But if you're not familiar with the work that AARP does, AARP.org/LGBTQ is the community that we have set up that has resources and information, anything from music and outings to grandparenting tips and all around the community. So,
well, that's pretty awesome. I have to stop here. We probably have listeners who are not familiar with what AARP stands for, the letters. We've had people, I had an interview with, actually it was a survey of a cast of, I don't know, 25 or 30 teenagers, and asked what AARP meant. And they were like, insurance? It's an insurance company, right? They had no idea. So I have a feeling some of our listeners may not know.
Yeah. So AARP, I'll say this, we support people 50 and older. That's our mission. We are, at one time, AARP stood for American Association of Retired People. I don't know what year it was, but there was a switch to just make our official name and brand the AARP. So it no longer stands for anything.
Oh, cool.
And I think really the driving reason, if you know our mission is to really serve and advocate for people 50 and older, a lot of people 50 and older are not retired.
Not retired. A lot of people 70 and over are not retired.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so it really, we want people to enjoy their whole life and have a rich life, but not always does it include work. So, and non-work.
My next question was to ask you about the importance of membership for our LGBTQ plus community. And I think you've pretty much covered that. There's a lot that's for anyone who's 50 plus.
It really is.
But is there anything that's specifically geared toward our community?
AARP, I think, at least in my role doing outreach, people will come up to our tables at health fairs and booths, and they're like, oh, you know, either they're scared because they think they might be of age to be a member, or they say, oh, I've been a member a long time. I really like it. But I find that membership, people get drawn in for different reasons. So some will automatically say, oh, I love the discounts. I really wanted to be a member for the discounts. And I know, Judy, that's why you joined 28 years ago.
Yeah. secret, right?
Right. My son is 22, and he has a buddy, and he's already a member. He likes the discounts, and so you can be a member at 18 and older, and there's not really an age requirement for the membership piece of it.
I had no idea.
Some people like the insurance that comes with that. Luckily, my job is not to sell memberships or anything. We just really want to connect people to the resources and programs that AARP has, but they also, some people don't realize the advocacy work that we do. We do in Washington on behalf of those 50 and older, but we also do it in North Carolina, and we work with local communities to make sure that they're age friendly and that we have policies in place that protect folks. In addition to that advocacy work, we also do a lot of education. We have a Public Policy Institute is part of AARP that does a lot of research. And we can talk later today about the dignity survey that AARP does for the LGBT community that we've been doing since 2017. So we have this driving research mechanism as well as our programs, as well as the discounts. There's a lot of good reasons to be an AARP member, but what I will say is what we do for one person, we do for all people. So the things on our website, the research, that's open to everybody. You know, if we do programming and community, that's free to everybody. We don't want membership to be a barrier. We don't want to promote membership in the community as an exclusive way. We really want the community services we do for everybody. So
that's kind of what we do at the Seymour Center. We do not call ourselves a senior center. All of our programs are open for any age, unless they're X-rated, in which case we don't let the kids in. But I don't think we have too many of those.
Maybe not enough of them.
There is that. But we've had a lot of cross-generation support going on. And on this show, we have plans for a grandparent to be on the show with a parent and getting some coaching. The grandparent is not having a good time with the they, them, and they love their kids, you know? They love their grandchildren. And the parent we have coming is a great advocate for non-binary kids. She has one. And that... I can't say her name, can I?
No, don't spoil it.
They're getting married. And her mother is going to be standing in as a parent for the new spouse. So the dad is taking their kid down the aisle. And the mother is taking the new spouse down the aisle. So it's really cool. There's a thing called stand-in parents that provides LGBTQ folk who do not have accepting parents somebody to take them down the aisle. But that's the sort of thing, that particular specific. It's so specific. Mm-hmm. How would a kid know, I need to go down the aisle and I don't have anybody? What do I do? So there's a something.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of thing we want to pull into our show, is the whatever is out there to support people.
You know, I love that example because there's so much wisdom on both sides when you talk about intergenerational kind of activities. You know, you've got the wisdom from the older population who has, you know, seen a different side of being out, right? And their experience in the LGBTQ community historically is so different than the youth. And being able, but youth are so empowered now, I think, it's just marvelous. But you've got this great bridge. And so when you bring those together, and I had the opportunity to go to the intergenerational dinner at the Seymour Center.
You met my husband.
I did.
Yes.
He's so interesting, by the way.
Isn't he cool? I'm never bored.
Yeah, great
never
background.
Bored. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, just those, you could just see the connections in the room being met, you know, and it was at a time where students were having exams, so they were really stressed out, and they were coming and having this free meal, and they were talking to, you know, older adults who had a whole different perspective on exams and what that meant in the broader scheme of, you know, the world. And it was just really nice to listen to each other share and support each other. Yeah.
I know my partner was someone who does not have a supportive family. And to be able to talk with me made a difference to them. Just to know that there's somebody in my generation who honors who they are. Yeah. And that was all over the room that night. It was amazing.
It was very special.
It was. It was indeed. Well, let me see here. The next thing, the question is already answered. How about these surveys that you've done?
That we've done, yeah. I'll talk specifically a little bit about our dignity survey that's been going on since 2017. And it's a survey that we hold with LGBT older adults. And when we say... For this particular survey, it's 45 and older. So even though our mission is 50 and older, this survey is for those 45 and older. And we know that the community of LGBTQ seniors really have experiences that are unique and different than their counterparts who are straight. And so... It's something that we take particular and pay a lot of attention to because it's something that feeds into our advocacy work. It feeds into how we need to deliver health care, how we need to do programming. But it really, I think, at the heart of the survey, and whether you like numbers or not, I think a lot of it's really interesting to think about some of those healthcare access, the caregiving, social isolation. These reports are really confounded and showcase that we need to pay special attention to the community. So I'll just say a couple of little numbers here and maybe we can reflect on them. But of those who are participating in the survey, we know that 31% of people have refrained from healthcare when they needed it, right? So they're holding back on getting health care that they need. They're not comfortable with our health care system.
That's like one out of three.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we know 23%, almost a quarter, have had a problem with the quality of their health care system.
And that I think a lot.
People could probably think of situations that they've been through where they haven't wanted to go to the doctor, or they didn't get the response that they wanted to, or maybe there wasn't competent care there around their particular needs. But particularly health care is a real feature of the Dignity Survey. Another is around caregiving. And 60% of those people who are 45 and older have been a caregiver. So it might be a caregiver for an aging parent. It might be a spouse. It might be a friend. It might even, 14% are caregivers for people they feel obligated to care for, even though they don't like them.
Oh.
Or who are not accepting of their identity is probably the right way to say it. So, you know, families are complex, histories are complex, and, you know, that causes stress. So there's 78% are really pulled down with this emotional stress of a caregiving responsibility.
Wow.
And 45% have felt alone in that. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
It's a big number. And mental health is important.
It is.
And social isolation within the community is a big issue alone. And then you add the caregiver isolation and loneliness. And then if you're in a situation where you're feeling obligated to take care of somebody who may not respect you or see you.
And on top of that, you personally may not have the health care you need.
Right. To take care of yourself.
A triple whammy. Yikes.
And then there, the other aspect, in addition to the caregiving and the health care, is financial, financial obligations and financial security. And we know there's decades of issues of why folks in the community don't make as much money as their counterparts and really struggle for financial sustainability. Housing's another topic that the survey focuses on, which is really, you know, all of these things together that build a whole person, it can really be a struggle. And we need to continue to do the research so that we have the information to make the needed changes.
One of the things that I saw in the survey, the 2024, was the huge role that income disparity plays in the well-being of our community. What's the answer to that? It's been there forever. I don't think there's ever been a time when we could say whether you're gay or not doesn't make a difference in how much you make, but I'm afraid that's not true.
And the data shows it. You're absolutely right.
Right.
We do have tools on our aarp.org/LGBTQ website about saving, about financial security, educational tools to help people. Not that that's the only thing, but it's a tool. It's a tool.
Right.
But there are certainly systemic issues that we know about unique to this community that need to be addressed.
And unfortunately are being less addressed now than they were even a year ago.
Yeah.
That's kind of frightening. I think one of the biggest things that I see as a reason we're not doing too well is that the government has defunded programs that have been established to train medical providers, psychiatrists, general practitioners, family doctors. A lot of them have no idea how to take care of us, particularly I'm thinking in the terms of the transgender community, and they don't have any way to get that information. As of now, that's been taken away from a lot of the programs that have been instrumental in building that.
Right. Now, AARP, we're a nonpartisan organization. We're a nonprofit organization. But we stay focused on issues. And, you know, we have a deep commitment and really reject any kind of discrimination. So things like that matter to us in terms of being able to lift up and elevate the needs of LGBTQ. And, you know, we know what the changes have been in D.C. In terms of those government funding. And it really distracts from, you know, all those things that we need to be doing.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
To do and improve health care access and financial security. And I know there is a lot of concern in the community.
There is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the research has been defunded. Education, research, all of that. And now medical care as well has been outlawed, is what I want to say. Prohibited.
Yeah.
It just to me is unbelievable. And I know that we're not here to talk about that.
But I think as people feel discouraged, right, in a community that already is experiencing a lot of stress, that it's really makes that even more important that the community come together, support each other to uplift, but reach out to other ones when you know that you haven't seen them, or if you they haven't been at a community event, or you haven't heard, because that isolation is devastating. Yeah. And I think the more folks get distracted by all the news and the current events, it can take a toll on somebody's mental health.
Absolutely.
And we've got to be more diligent to work to help each other out.
Right. I think one of the important things to us on this radio show is to tell our stories, to make sure that folks who are listening know somebody who's transgender, know somebody who's going through these difficult times and how they're coping, so that people who are listening know, oh, that would work for me. I could have that.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to have this radio show be about.
It's about resilience, right?
Yes.
I think what I hear you say, I mean, there's an empowerment to sharing your story.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But there's also skills of resilience that we need to learn from each other and share
right.
with each other.
Yes.
To get through the hard times.
Right.
One of the things, and I just love the concept of the show that we've been doing at AARP North Carolina, is Rainbow Inspiration. So they're on our YouTube video. We started it in 2021. My counterpart in the mountain region, she lives in Asheville, and she does interviews with members of the LGBTQ community statewide. And I think it's quarterly, but don't hold me to it. But Rebecca Chaplin's her name. She does a great job with these interviews. And they're all on our YouTube video. So if you ever need
cool.
a feel good, or you want to like meet really cool people from across the state by watching a YouTube, go to AARP North Carolina's web YouTube station and look up the Rainbow Inspirations program that we do.
That's awesome. We would definitely get ideas from them. And we should share.
We should. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
I know we know some folks out west that are going to be on our show virtually.
Oh, great.
Not out west, but Western North Carolina. Yeah.
That's what we mean in North Carolina when you say west. Yeah.
So that's a great resource. Did you make a note?
No, it's been really
Rainbow.
Oh, Rainbow Inspirations.
Inspiration. Got it.
And I'll send it to you so you have it too, in case you can post it on the podcast. But you know, I'll say there are some good things. One of the things that we've done in this area, in the Triangle area, for Pride Month, the city of Raleigh, their historic preservation department did a study, a cultural context study of LGBT community in Raleigh. It was through the city of Raleigh, so it was only focused, but it gave a historic preservation to actual buildings and locations in an effort to start to identify buildings that could be on a list around historic preservation in Raleigh. And so they completed this survey. It took several years for them to do it. And we hosted two sort of public sessions to the LGBT community so they could hear about the survey, hear about the results, hear about what the next steps are. And there's 15 buildings that have been identified that could potentially be on the National Historic of.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was really cool. And then also in June, we partnered AARP North Carolina with the town of Cary as their pride partner. So all of the town of Cary, they had a robust list of activities for Pride Month. We were able to partner and work with them.
Wow.
We did. They had all sorts of good things going on. And the town of Cary, similar to Orange County, is part of AARP's age-friendly network and is an age-friendly community. And as part of that, they wanted to really make sure that they provide a variety of opportunities for all citizens. And so our being able to walk alongside them during Pride Month and do that was really cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And you're one of the sponsors for our Pride picnic.
October 4th.
Yes. It's going to be great. Well, I'd like to take a moment. We're talking about telling our stories, and Robin has some information about
First, two things. Listening to this, it has been very hard to keep my microphone down without jumping in and derailing things. I particularly want to hear. I did not have any idea about the intergenerational work that AARP was doing, and that's really exciting. And then everything. It's just I'm learning as much too as we hope our listeners are learning out there. I mean, basically, it's so much more than Mahjong. So much more than Mahjong. But while we let Heather and Judy get centered, anything a little zen here like that, we would like to tell our listeners about the Lavender South. It's a project of the Campaign for Southern Equality and an opportunity for LGBTQ plus people in the South to tell their stories of resilience and resistance, joy and pain during a time when our community is under attack. Now through October 5th, Lavender South welcomes a variety of storytelling mediums, including written stories, poetry, and visual art in response to the following prompt. Reflect back on your younger self, whether a year or 50 years younger. What would you want to share with them about your life today? What would you tell your younger self knowing what you know now?
Ooh.
Yeah, where do we start? So, for further information and submission details and always back issues of Lavender South, please visit www.southernequality.org/the-lavender-south/. And that sounds like a really good thing. I know Judy writes poetry. I know her husband writes poetry. We just had our friend Deborah in last week to talk about memoir and recording our own history. And who knows, that just sounds like a really, really good thing. And we wanted to let our listeners know about it here.
That actually would be a really cool prompt to have for one of our radio shows.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's something that... the question comes up a lot in forums on social media and things like that and discussions. I was very lucky, speaking of intergenerational, Judy's husband, Mac, and I, a couple of years ago, were part of an intergenerational playwriting group with seniors and teenagers. And it was just fascinating to get into that because it was almost kind of like talking to your younger self, but a contemporary younger self. You know, the same issues that we as seniors would have, and then teenagers have the same kind of issues, but the way, as you're talking earlier about the resilience of the younger generation, they approach things differently. They have a different set of vocabulary. The issues can be the same, but it's just we learn so much from each other that it's just,
absolutely.
You're back to you.
Absolutely. I think that's probably the most important thing we can do right now to keep our, I want to say our country aware of and caring about who we are, is to tell our stories, to share our stories, to talk to kids who've never met somebody who's over 30, you know. They have no idea that it's possible to be in your 80s and still in love with the person you met 30, 40 years before. That's something that we as a team of hosts together, the three of us combined, have over a century of committed relationship. It's amazing to me that the three of us have kept it together and we're still in love with our mates.
It's not
very
easy.
Cool.
It
yeah.
is.
And that's something that a lot of youngsters who are discouraged and frightened, they need to know that it's possible. They can have that. So we're kind of proud of that as part of our, what do I want to say, our core of what we're bringing to the game. That's kind of cool.
Our mission statement.
Absolutely. I think for me, telling my story has been kind of, it's helped me remember who I am. And that was when I was interviewed here. We did the first couple of shows we did, we've interviewed one another. And when I was telling my story, it was like, oh, yeah, I did do that. Wow, that was really cool that I did that. So that's the sort of thing I really, for me, I want to keep remembering. Mm-hmm. And for the listener, I wanted to know this is possible. You can do these things.
I'll say, and when I was in undergraduate school at East Carolina, my first experience with the community, I was working at the Pitt County AIDS Service Organization, and so that was the nonprofit that did the Ryan White funds. We did HIV education. We had a food bank. We had a speakers bureau. And I was in charge of the speakers bureau and volunteers. And many of the people that we served were gay and had HIV. And so my job was to help connect them to speaker bureau opportunities. And I think that's where I really became captivated, was listening to those stories and got a whole new sense of what people's life experience was and how hard it was. And this was in like the mid-90s, so it was still kind of a scary time. I mean, still new, Eastern North Carolina, a lot of high emotions around gays and HIV and AIDS. And seeing the discrimination and what people had to face was really eye-opening for me as a college kid. Yeah.
I'm glad you listened.
Yeah.
And here you are.
I think
taking
that
care
is.
Of it's, us at the other end of the scale.
Yeah. You know, you have, as you look back, right, on your years and thinking about your younger self, I mean, that definitely was an important role that impacted what I did. And I talked to you about having different jobs in my career. And one of them, and thinking back to another maybe moment that just I hold close to me, I was at the State Division of Aging and Adult Services, which is the government agency in the Department of Health and Human Services. And my role was as the planner to write the state plan for how North Carolina as a state was going to be prepared and plan for our aging population. And it was very important to me that we had a plan that reflected all of North Carolina's seniors. And at that time, I was living in Raleigh, and the LGBTQ Center of Raleigh hosted a SAGE program, which was the older adult program. And so I called the director, Les Geller, and I said, let's talk. I'm writing this plan, but I need to have a better understanding. I want to like talk to some folks. We need to see what you feel like the needs are, kind of do a needs assessment. And so Les invited me to the center and gave me a tour. And I met some of the seniors who went there. And there were two things that just, you know, you get into your sort of professional mode and you're in a box. And then you have these moments that the box just sort of shatters around you,
oh,
right?
And cool.
We were talking about the Family Caregiver Support Program, which is this federal program, and we administer it in North Carolina. And Les goes, well, you know, that word family in front of caregiver support program is kind of a deal breaker for a lot of people, Heather. It's kind of worrisome because we don't know what that word family means when it comes from the government. And is that an inclusive word for family?
And wow, good question.
It was a great question.
Wow.
And according to the way the programs works in the law, it is a very inclusive word, and it does not mean blood family. It could be family of choice. But it was a word that it's in our program, that's what we call it. And we don't even need to use the word family. We could just call it the caregiver support program. So there were things like that just thought, gosh, words really do matter. And people have unique perspectives based on their life experience, and sometimes we need to stop and ask and listen. And then, you know, the other big point was the stories that we heard about people who had to go back in the closet when they needed help with long-term services and supports. So the real fear that people have about letting people into their home and having to take down pictures or pretend to be something else. Or if you have to go into a long-term care facility and you've got to worry about the care you receive, that vulnerability. And, you know, I just can't imagine anything worse than having to not be your authentic self when you're even the most vulnerable. So, you know, these are issues that are really core to, I think, AARP and the things that we want to be able to make people aware of and work to make sure that no one has to do those.
We have, my husband and I have some friends who, transgender folk, who when they reached the age they needed to go into a nursing home or a retirement home or something that a little assisted care was needed, could not find a place that would accept a transgender person. Just, it boggles my mind that that could happen in this country here and now, and it does. That's scary.
Yeah.
That's scary.
We need to support and make sure we have affirming care.
No, I was just going to say, this is a really good time for me not to have my mic on. Because the seven forbidden words on radio, they're just running through my head over and over and over. So.
Uh-oh. Those words. Turn off your mic.
You can thank them. I'll be back.
Yeah. That makes a lot of people angry, especially people in the trans community.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just unbelievable that someone would have to worry about that. And you can't untransition. I suppose it's possible, but I can't imagine a trans person having to detransition. Like there are lots of bad words around that thought. My husband transitioned when he was 50, and that was 25 years ago, and he's just the light of my life, and I can't imagine that someone would say, oh, you can't be in this nursing home because we'd have to put you in the ladies instead of the men's. And I can't even think that at this point. But that's the sort of thing that is happening. And I really have to build a support system for him. If I die before he does, I want to make sure he's got an honorable, someone that will keep his dignity intact if he should need help. And that's
great planning.
I mean,
that's what families need to do.
And absolutely.
I think if I could, I think that might be, we have talked, Heather, about Mac and I have known each other for almost 20 years, but I'm 2 years into my transition. He's 25 years into his transition. And we have been talking about having the two of us in to compare notes. It's not quite intergenerational, but it is. There's
close,
enough of a time difference and everything. And I think this is an ideal point for us to say for that, not to say, no, not now, but I think that's something we can really visit in detail again when Mac and I are here, our different perspectives. He's not that much older than I am, and what we have done so far, what we need to do, what ARP offers us as seniors to do with that. But I think, again, not trying to derail this conversation, but I was just really inspired to think that let's put a pin in that and let's come back to that with Mac and I, who are both sort of in the same pickle of transitioning in our golden years.
Yes. That actually would be, make another note for a future program, is to have someone who is in the who provide advice for people who are putting together their, I guess, probably their end of life plans documents, and have someone give us some information about here's what you can do and this works. So that's something that Mac and I were able to find and put in place.
And we have some articles on our website that help with those kinds of things.
We have a really good law firm that has been very good about adjusting to my transition. Came in as soon as my name was legally changed last Christmas, they came and said, okay, and they updated my medical power of attorney and my durable power of attorney immediately.
Cool.
Before any of the rest of the stuff was done, just so that if something happened, you know, that was in my legal documents.
Right.
So
that would be in place. Right.
So this almost could be an entire show.
I think you're right.
And we also have specific caregiver guides for LGBTQ communities, because we know that a lot of the caregiving resources we have, you know, just maybe don't feel comfortable for folks. So we have some targeted resources around caregiving.
How did I not know that?
I brought some for you. I didn't give them to you yet, but I brought you a guide so you could look at it.
That's very awesome to know about that.
There are things you need to consider that are different than the regular, the general population.
Right, right. That's great to know that's there. Wow. I thought I knew everything.
I think you guys have a long history. You're going to have a long history with a lot of rich conversations ahead of you.
I think so.
I think these topics could go on and on and on.
Yes. I think so, too. We have a list of about, 50 ideas of people we want to talk to or subjects we want to address. And it just gets richer and richer as we think about it. So we've got another thing on our list today.
And weirdly enough, or maybe not so weirdly enough, most of the people that we've approached said, that sounds so cool. Yes, I would love to be on your show. I was like, do you mean I actually have to work now? I thought we were going to do reruns. Weren't we going to just play that one show over and over and over?
We have to decide which show would be our favorite one to be. What's the word I want? A photojournalist is going to come and be in the studio with us for one of our shows. And she's going to do a whatever you call it. What do you call it?
Like a layout.
I think a photo essay.
Essay.
Yes, for our radio show. So that's something we didn't even dream would be possible. And somebody showed up and said,
I have to get over my photophobia really quickly.
You'll be all right. You'll be all right.
It's a mixed bag, and it's really indicative. Next week's show, Heather, is my interview.
So you get to be in this seat.
I get to be in that seat and everything. And that's one of the things I will talk about is that I'm early enough in my transition, I'm still really insecure about my physical appearance. I'm very insecure about my voice as well, but obviously I just can't worry about that now because the mic is hot. So I will worry about that later.
right.
But the photo essay is a great idea, and I will try to just sort of...
Just fake it till you make it, maybe.
It's an interesting part of my personal experience, and I can't talk to trans people everywhere. I can only talk about my personal experience at not quite 2 years into my physical transition. So I'm very young compared to, Judy and Betty and people who have been doing this for years. They're comfortable. I can bet you right now, without even asking him, that if someone in the room says Mac is going to respond. If someone in the room says Robin, I take, yes. If there's a beat, there's just a beat where I'm still getting used to it. I think it's a really good mix, and I am very fortunate to have these people to work with, because if I'm going to transition in public, I can't think of two other people I'd rather do it with, and to bring in people like you with all this fascinating stuff that I don't know about. And our listeners, they're learning as well. So
it's important.
Yeah. And I feel like other people would echo what you're saying by listening and hearing. I feel like hearing the stories, you guys are, people are gravitating to you. This is something they need, and that's why it's just taken on. You know, you're a magnet now, right? Yeah.
That's true. And we also are open to noticing who we're talking to just anywhere. Like I met a lady in the elevator, 2 weeks ago, right here at the library. And I said, we just started our radio show, and it's blah, blah, blah. And she said, oh, I spent most of my career being an archivist at the Duke University LGBTQ. And I'm like, what?
How cool is that?
Is that cool? So she was right in the library, in the elevator with me. And she's written books. She says, oh, my gosh. So she's going to be on the show. It's just amazing, the stuff that's coming up.
I think there's a lot of room for cross-pollination between us, our show, and your Western Carolina YouTube.
Yes. We would love to have you guys on our show anytime.
That would be so great.
And I would extend that invitation to both of you to come. And
we have a great partnership.
Mm-hmm. We have about 10 minutes left, so leaving room for our stunning inspirational quote that I have picked for today for our sign-off and everything. It's about another 5 minutes or so of actual AARP stuff that you really wanted to make sure got included.
Actually, as we've been talking, I've been wondering if you have some ideas, given your connections in the elder community and services for folks in the elder community. Can you think of a show that you think would be great? Someone to interview or someone connected to a particular something?
Yeah, and I didn't mention this earlier, but I am on the board of Carolina Aging Alliance, which is a nonprofit that serves LGBTQ seniors sort of in Central North Carolina. That's another hat that I wear, and I've been on the board.
That sounds like another guest slot.
Yep. Well, yes. Or we can pick somebody else from the board because it was an outgrowth of the Sage Raleigh program,
right.
And now it's its own nonprofit, and it has grown, and we're doing a lot of advocacy and engagement activities, positive social engagement, training of aging network providers and things like that. So I think that might be a good topic.
Absolutely. They are also co-hosting the picnic we're having.
Right, the picnic. Right. So they're great partners, but I'm a little biased in that. But I would say that might be something to look at as well.
There's also, just so our listeners will know, there's a Triangle Carolina Aging Alliance, and there's also one in the Triad,
right,
which is Greensboro and
Orange County kind of is on the crossover there. I know we've got people who've come from the Triad to Orange County. We got people from the Triangle that come over.
Yes.
So there's kind of a little bit of an overlap. Yeah,
there is. And we have been tasked by Shanae, who is the person for our listeners, who is our staff person for the senior resource team that we're a part of. She has tasked us with hosting some events in Passmore, which is in Hillsboro.
Oh, great.
So that's one of the things that we're going to reach out to the Triad gang for some ideas, what they would like.
If you need help or want a partner, let me know. I'd be happy
to. You're on my list. Thank you.
Yeah. The one other thing I would mention about AARP, if there's anything that, you know, I've said or you've heard today and you feel like you would like to volunteer with AARP. I don't know if people realize that we are so embedded in communities nationwide. There are four other people like me in North Carolina who are working in communities. So we've got the Mountain area, we have Charlotte, we have the Triad, and we have a coastal representative. And we all are doing work within the community.
Well, that should be an ad for our listeners.
So
if you'd like to join the gang.
If you want to join the gang. And we have particular volunteers who want to only work on LGBTQ issues. And we have others that want to do anything, or they might be more focused on a particular issue, like they like caregiving, or they're really passionate about Social Security. So wherever you would fall in that continuum, if there was any interest, you go to aarp.org/volunteer. You can sign up to be a volunteer and work in your local community.
That's pretty cool. I like that. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I can ask from personal testimony that as I have spent most of the past year doing the whole ID records updating, name change, everything like that, AARP was one of the easiest ones for me to call up and say, hi, I've changed my name and my gender. And they said, okay, fine. We'll send you a new card. Okay. That was basically it.
Wow. That's awesome. That says a lot.
That's nice
AARP.
To hear.
Yeah. No, it was very easy because, well,
that's awesome.
Other organizations have, I have not yet met anyone, any government employees that I've dealt with, or the driver's license, Medicare, Social Security, any of those people who gave me any guff, who was resistant or shamed me, everything. They were all extremely helpful to the extent that as their hands were even being tied while we were working on this process, they were all encouraging and helpful and pushing and boom, 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 boom. So the only thing I have left is my passport.
And that's going to be...
And I have my document of attestation that I am a member of a targeted group that in the decision following Trump versus Orr, I am allowed to have my passport issued in the correct gender.
Aha.
So that's excellent. Part of my application process now. It's just our post office, as we may or may not know, was flooded during Chantal and hasn't reopened yet for the passport office. So,
yeah.
And that, I mean, I would have to go all the way to Carborough. Oh, my God.
But
I just, no, it's been a very busy year. And so it's just like, I will do it.
I feel like you've learned a lot of information.
Yeah, there's tons of it. But again, AARP really stands out as like, it took months to get Medicare squared away after Social Security and then get Medicare. Now I can do all my insurance carriers. Hello, AARP. And I was just prepared for like days of doing this. I was, okay, you're done. We'll send a new card.
That's awesome.
Oh, okay.
And then that takes like, a lot of the stress out of that piece.
Yeah. That was just, I mean, and others were okay. It just took longer because of the bureaucracy of them, and it all came through, and all my insurance cards are updated, and all my medical records, everything. It's great, but AARP really kind of set the tone for everything like that, and so I can appreciate it, and you as representative of them, thank you.
I'm glad you had a good experience.
Yes.
Holy smokes, we've only got 3 minutes.
Oh my gosh. Oh
and you've got to wrap it up.
We have about 1 minute where you guys can talk, and then I will go into my laboriously chosen inspirational quote here at the end.
Well, I just want to thank you. Thank you so much. We have volunteer opportunities. We have partnerships we've built across the state. This has been...
Programming opportunities that are endless, right?
I know. Thank you so much.
This has been a pleasure and a joy. I just am grateful that you guys thought to invite me.
Absolutely.
It means a lot.
Absolutely. I know for me, 28 years of connection with the AARP, and I learned a lot of new stuff today.
Good.
Thank you.
Good.
It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you, guys.
Okay. Well, that is our show for today. I'm going to see if I can make this last for exactly a minute and a half, 2 minutes. But thank you so very much, Heather, for everything that you brought and everything you have inspired and all the tangents you have led us to do. And Judy has taken copious notes from this. And thank you, Judy, for bringing Heather in and everything. And correct me if I'm wrong, but for additional information on AARP and the Triangle, you can visit states.aarp.org/North-Carolina.
That's it. That's the North Carolina office. Yep.
Okay, there we go. So, and with all the information we've had out there, that should be great. Oh, perfect. Okay, 1 minute left. We'd also like to take this time to thank again WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro at 103.5 FM and the Orange County Department on Aging for making Out on the Edge a reality. But we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for your support. Remember, you can contact us at outontheedgeradio@gmail.com. So for our alleged inspirational quote that I've already referred to several times, I would We've cheesed these to hopefully uplift your spirit and maybe make mean old Monday feel a little less mean. So today I would like to offer some wisdom from John Lennon. A dream you dream alone is only a dream. A dream you dream together is reality.
Thank you. Imagine that. Thank you.
Okay, join us again next week with Judy McCord, Betty Priu, and me, Robin Hamilton. Be safe, make noise, peace out.